You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday. ESPN 102.5, The Game. We said at high noon we would catch up with Ramona Shelburne. She is on the line, covers the NBA for ESPN. Ramona, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. I just want to say this. One, we've had to go through a lot of crap in 2020. It can get on down the road for as much as I'm concerned. It all started with Kobe Bryant. I just wanted to say that thought you did a tremendous job of helping with ESPN's coverage of that. You were all over the place, and you had great stories. So just a hat tip to you on the Kobe Bryant coverage from your end.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, he was, you know, that was my dude, right?
So, still hard to believe, you know, Ramona, you know?
It's almost like it didn't happen, to be honest. Like, you just kind of like, that was so crazy that actually happened, like your mind still can't wrap your head around it. You know what I mean? Like you can't process it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
What? Wait, Kobe died? What? You know? And, you know, I feel like I've been watching so much with him that it's like he's still here. You know what I mean? Like you see all these games and all these interviews and, you know, that's what's nice when you're a legend, even though he had way too short of a life. Like, he left behind so much that we get to watch and enjoy and see all over again, you know? I mean, it's between, you know, him being in a Jordan doc and all the classic Laker games they've been playing on ESPN or interviews he's done, like, you still hear a lot from him.
He gave already to us so much, and it's still hard to believe how much more he would have given, you know, for the rest of his mm-hmm. life. He had so much more to give. You brought up The Last Dance documentary. What did you make of the 10 episodes?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was really good for all of us, right? Didn't you guys enjoy it?
Like,
I
no did. Doubt.
It was like fun. You know, I like to, like right now, I'm in this place where like I don't really watch too much cable news anymore. I don't really watch, like, I have to like focus on my son. He's a toddler. He's like 20 months old, right? I mean, I just chase him around all day, right? And then, and my job. And between that, like, I'm busy. Like, if I get too much into watching the news, I'll just get depressed, you know? So it's been so nice to, like, have sort of escapist shows, you know? Like, I'll watch, you know, Top Chef or something, or I'll watch The Last Dance. And it was, I mean, like when you watch The Last Dance, it was like assembly. It was like sports, right? I mean, it was we started relitigating all these issues that were big in 1998. Like, you know, why did the Bulls have to break up? And, you know, what was Dennis Rodman? How Phil coached Dennis Rodman? I mean, there was just so many things from that documentary that like were just great storylines. I mean, I was into it because I knew Phil really well from coaching the Lakers out here in LA. I knew, but you know, some of the guys on that team, obviously I knew Steve Kerr, Jed Bushler, and Bill Wennington, Cartwright, like all those guys have gone on and coached in the NBA, whether it's assistant coach or head coach. And it was like, it was just great to watch it. Plus, you know, Jordan is this guy that I feel like people forgot about a little bit. Like, he was obviously, he's still regarded as the greatest of all time, but like you forgot who he was and all the different complexities of his personality. And this just like big deep dive into it. And I mean, I'll tell you my takeaways from it, which was, you know, I look at it as I'm always fascinated by how people are great. Like what makes them great? How do they stay on top? How do they continue to push themselves? How do they continue to refine their craft when everybody's coming from them. And I noticed that, you know, Phil, Michael, Rodman, all these guys, like they were so intense that they would burn out, right? Like they would just, you know, Phil retired and unretired twice. Michael retired, unretired twice. Rodman ran off to Vegas or Atlantic City, like a lot of it is just that the intensity that you need to maintain the level they're at, it just requires them to either escape from it sometimes or to have escapist type activities, whether it's playing golf or gambling or whatever it is. But, you know, I'm always fascinated with that personality type.
Two of the three of us lived the Jordan era. I mean, we were young adults, but we lived it. But the fun part was we thought we knew all the stories, right? Or we knew most of the stories, and we learned things. It's another thing for you. You cover the sport. You're in NBA circles. You talk to people. You've probably heard all the stuff. But I have to believe you probably – did you learn anything? Was there anything you went, huh, that's interesting. Like, we learned things. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess – like for me, I guess I was in high school and college for the Jordan year, so I wasn't working. And I think I understood why they were breaking up. Like, I mean, it was the telling of the story is the narrative arc of like, okay, they were getting old and Jerry Krause wanted to break them up before they got too old. I mean, I think that was the same arc, right? That came through then as it did now. But I don't think I realized on any of the details of like why Krause wanted to break them up, and covering it now from a from this perspective, I look at all the different ways that it would have been handled differently. And that, like, all you would have done with the championship team like that, you would have just given Pippen like an extension, a short one, probably like 2 years, where you kind of overpay him, and that way you keep the team together until they lose. But you also are able to trade him because it's that kind of a trade asset, you know. And I'm used to the NBA now where there's no such thing as, like, the team's too expensive. Like, people don't break their teams up right now because they cost too much. They certainly don't break championship teams up. And that's because there is a luxury tax. There's a salary cap and a luxury tax. Back then, there wasn't. And also, the revenues are completely different, you know. So the Bulls were... you know, I think their total salaries that year was $61 million, and the salary cap was $29 million. So they were, I mean, you know, more than double what the salary cap was. And frankly, like Michael's salary alone was more than what the salary cap was, right? He was over $33 million that year. So they made a lot of money, and it was so much. Like, breaking that up was like an acceptable thing to do back then. You know, because it was so expensive to keep them together. People, if you try that now, like if the Warriors would have said, oh, we got to choose between KD, Clay, and Draymond, people would have got upset, you know, like, oh, you're making all this money, you're winning championships, you got to spend, you know? I mean, that's like kind of the new standard for championship organizations. So it doesn't age well, right? Like why they had to break it up. It didn't age well. And that, I guess that's what I learned, because at the time, I think I just kind of took it at face value. Yeah, they were getting old. It cost too much to keep them together. Okay.
We're talking with Ramona Shelburne from ESPN. She covers the NBA. And Ramona, we don't have an NBA team here, but it's so fun for us to follow. Of course, we get more into it as the playoffs go on. But we know that the NBA, number one, has some elite superstars that have massive followings on social media, massive presence nationally, and they're already, I think, at the forefront when it comes to sports teams on how to express themselves socially with issues that are going on right now. How do you see this going to the next level? Because it seems like that's what the collective thought is. They want to take this to the next level to try to be a positive force here.
You mean with regard to like what's going on in the country right now with protests and everything?
Exactly.
Or just in general. Okay. You know, I think that it's been interesting because I think everybody is there's been a few guys who have really been out who were part of the protest, you know, Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon, those guys. There have been a couple of, you know, I think the Lonzo Ball and his brothers were out, right? It was LaMelo and LiAngelo, right? I think there's been a few. I haven't seen the, like, some superstars. Trae Young was there the other day. Trae Young was out in Oklahoma. But one thing I think is interesting is that I see a lot on social media, but I haven't seen necessarily as much guys out in the streets protesting and you know, walking and speaking and that kind of language, you know, like giving their voice at the actual rally, right? Giving their voice as people are marching. Seen some of it, not you know, but I think, and I don't know what that is that, you know, hey, there's still a pandemic going on, and, you know, going outside with thousands of people is not exactly the safest thing to do right now. Like, I think it's that. But I also think there is, everybody is, I don't want to say conflicted, but everybody's kind of, there's a difference between going out to protest and being seen as condoning looting, right? And some of the other stuff that's happening. And I think we're all kind of wrestling with that. Like, you know, where's that line of like, you're allowed to protest, but then how do you process, you know, breaking into stores and stealing shoes, you know, and iPads and whatever people are taking, right? So you see a lot more on social media with people trying to help, with people talking, and rather than necessarily, like, you know, getting into the rally like Jaylen Brown has. And I think, you know, Jaylen Brown's done a really good job of, like, being part of the rally, being articulate on social media about why people are protesting, what they're protesting, what he's trying to accomplish. And then, you know, making sure that there's a line drawn between that and the violence and looting that's been happening more at night, you know. But I live in Los Angeles, guys, so, I mean, it's hard for me to watch my city like this, right? You feel the pain that people have, but then I see, you know, I was just watching the news during the day, and it's, you know, everybody's breaking into the van store, you know, in the middle of the day in Santa Monica. And you're like, okay, what do those shoes have to do with, you know, why you're protesting? Like, you know, there's a conflated message, you know, and I think that's why everybody's kind of being cautious in what they say, like making sure they're supportive of the protesters, but also not condoning the violence.
I've heard a lot of people standing up and say, you know, the next step to make the real change is, you know, mobilizing people and organizing people to, you know, register to vote, all of the things that can really move everything forward. It would seem like that's got to be an initiative. If the players could all come together and help that cause, that would seem to be really constructive at this time.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen many players get political, right? I haven't seen, and I don't mean just in their views, but in supporting any one candidate. We saw LeBron do that in 2016. LeBron campaigned for Hillary Clinton, if you remember. He was out in Ohio, and he went to rallies, and he campaigned for her. I'm trying to think of any. Magic Johnson has for several different candidates over the years. I haven't seen as much of that, of like, you know, where does this go next? I think people, I definitely think you will see a lot of players talk about registering to vote and get out the vote. I'll be curious to see if they endorse any candidate, though, or whether it's presidential or at the state level or anything like that. Because those are all different thresholds. Like, they're all different levels that you have to cross. So I wonder how far you'll see guys go. And also, I know this can sound weird, but it's everybody's in such a limbo right now. Whether, you know, I think we're going to get a vote on Thursday. I think we're going to have a plan to bring the NBA back, but I mean, there's still 6 weeks to go between whenever we get a, you know, that approved, but I think it's going to be Thursday, but could stretch into Friday, I guess. And playing, I mean, they have to go through training camps. They have to all be tested constantly. Like, what are we going to do if there's an outbreak of players that, you know, on one team or staffers on one team? Like, there's still just like a long road between approving a plan and actually playing again. And so I think everybody is just kind of in this state of like, we just got to put one foot in front of the other and like focus on that, staying safe, stay healthy. Like, that's one thing I keep trying to remind everyone right now. Like, you know, COVID-19 didn't go away. You know, it's still out there. And just because our attention went to something else, it doesn't mean you can be any less safe. So I think players are wrestling with honestly what all of us are, right, in our own daily lives.
Ramona Shelburne from ESPN is here with us on 102.5 The Game. So, as you mentioned, the vote coming Thursday, hopefully more of a plan in place. Does it feel like 22 games that's where the, or 22 teams, I should say, that's where this is going to be?
I think so. It would have to be like a real change, because the reasoning on 22 games is pretty well thought out. You know, it's okay. Every level that you get to is a little bit more unsafe, right? 15 is the safest because there's the fewest amount of people. 20, I thought it was going to be 20 for a while just because, you know, in the Eastern Conference, there's only really one team that's within six games, and that's the Washington Wizards, and nobody really sees them as a playoff team. But, you know, okay, there are four teams in the Western Conference that are within five games, right? So it's that made a lot of sense. But then people thought, well, that's kind of weird to only have four extra teams, and what about in the Eastern Conference? How do you make those games meaningful? You know, there's got to be something at stake rather than just seeding. So 22 was like this number that people arrived at where it's more, it's about two thirds of the league, not quite, you know, 23 would be, but the regular season games would theoretically be meaningful. And I think that enough, but it's also not so many that you have too many people in the bubble, right? So 30 teams felt like too many people. But there is this sort of last stand of the 30-team option that's taking place right now, just because nobody really wants to go 9 months without seeing their team play. Then they would lose that revenue. They kind of out of sight, out of mind. You know, there's that idea of you know, if you're not playing and people aren't talking about you, they're talking about somebody else, right? Whether your team's in the playoff race or not. So there's still some talk about, could we do 30 teams or what else could we do? Just to keep those eight other teams engaged. But I think it's kind of like Goldilocks, right? Too hot, too cold, you know, just right. Like, I think it's too few, too much, just about right. That's what I think the last conversations are this week.
A lot of what we've talked about here, obviously being an NHL market, is, you know, how much are you willing to rob Peter to pay Paul to finish this season, but, you know, affect next season. So what kind of conversations are taking place within the NBA? Because I also feel like the NHL and the NBA, you can put them kind of in the same category because they seem to work so well together. But what kind of conversations have taken place of, we want to get this finished, whether it's finished the regular season, then playoffs or going to playoffs, but we also don't want to affect next season as much at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody has a problem with starting next season in December. If anything, I think people want to do that just because the fear of next season, and I'll tell you, this is in all sports, not just basketball, is of the second wave, if there's a second wave in the fall. And everybody is, you know, bracing for that. I mean, there could be a second wave this summer, and, you know, who knows, right? I think people are definitely bracing for a second wave. And, you know, if you have your season starting the normal time, which is, you know, October, November for the NBA, you're right in the thick of that. And the idea that, you know, you'd be able to find a way for fans to go, that's kind of out of the question. The whole extra season without fans is really hard. And I think that with if you start in December, you may not have fans right away. You may, you know, but there's a better chance starting later, just because, like, the idea that we could have a vaccine or we could have other treatments, you've just, you know, you bought yourself some time. So maybe it may not be in December, but it could be in March, right? And theoretically, the season would be extended next year too. There could be other ways that you deal with it too. You could have just like a more condensed, compact schedule where you don't have as many off days. You could still finish around the same timeline as you usually do. But people are really concerned about next season, not just, you know, second wave of it, but going an entire season without fans. That really does affect the bottom line.
Ramona, thanks for the visit. Good luck chasing the 20-month around. 20-month-year-old around.
Oh, my God, I'm about to go do it right now.
Yeah.
I'm taking my child care shift. My husband and I trade off every few hours, so I was supposed to start at 10:15, and he's like texting me, "You almost done?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be right there."
We've been there.
You get the signal. Yeah,
we've been there.
We've had that signal. Yeah,
We know where you are right now.
Run around, and he's going to scream, and I'm going to say, no, please don't open the refrigerator door and take out, you know, the glass bottle. It's going to be that. Just start coming right up.
Well, you and the family continue to be safe, and thanks for the visit today.
You too, guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Ramona Shelburne. She covers the NBA for ESPN. A lot to digest there. We'll come back and discuss. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.